and welcome to the Eternal Homemaking Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Sensenig, and today I bring you part two of a conversation with Pamela Nastasi. She shares about getting married in her mid-30s and transitioning from the independence of a single life, her husband's job as a firefighter, and being affected by the recent rioting in Charlotte, North Carolina, building into our heavenly home, and what it means for us now, knowing Christ is preparing a home for us. The story of how God brought Jay and Pamela together and their marriage. And we even talk about making kombucha and other homemade products. I had a lot of fun talking with Pamela, and I hope you enjoy the rest of our conversation.
Talking about marriage and getting married in my mid-30s when I had a very established idea of who I was in my life and the way things should be. And I say sometimes that God had me get married because he wanted to teach me lessons that I wouldn't learn any other way. And one thing I didn't know that I had was pride, to the extent of I knew the right place for things to go. And my husband had the nerve, who was turning 38 when we got married, he had a different idea. So I had to sit there and think. And honestly, his way of keeping things in the house was not logical, but it made sense to him. So for example, extra toilet paper rolls were not kept in the bathroom. They were kept in the laundry area, which I would think the bathroom would be a better place to keep them. But I thought, you know, I can't come in here and rearrange everything. Why not walk all the way to the utility room? Why would that be a hardship for me? So it's a few extra steps. You know, is this my pride to say, yeah, but this is the right way. My way is better. Says who? Why is it better?
Says me.
Maybe walking is better for me than having the quick convenience. Maybe the most convenient way is not the best way. So how dare I? And so we talked through a lot of stuff because I would say, yeah, I want to say that this is where it should go. But you know what? Maybe not. And there are times you'd be like, yeah, that is a better idea, and we would change it. Yeah. And then there are other things he just liked it the way it was. And I had to say, understanding how hard it was for me to say, that shouldn't go there. That doesn't go there. What's wrong with you? Let me know how prideful I was and how much I needed to deal with that. And usually when God dealt with that in my heart, my husband come along and go, why are we keeping this here? Shouldn't we keep this da 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 da? Because it wasn't about that thing. It was about my heart issue. And when my heart issue was resolved, the physical thing usually resolved itself very easily.
I wonder if some of those things, when you're older and getting married, you're more ingrained in.
I've had my own house. I've had my own space. Right. I'd already decided where things would go to be the most efficient and the most useful and the best. And being a woman, I felt like I knew more about the house than he did. But he had been a bachelor and had lived on his own for years and had his own system of doing things. And I thought, it's not fair for me to come in and suddenly change all of his stuff. You work through things, yes. And I had to let go of that and instead find it very interesting where he put things. And sometimes I would ask him, I'd say, now I'm not asking you to change where we're keeping this, but I'm just curious as your thought process behind why you're keeping it here. I just find that interesting. And if I was doing it in a way that was like, I find this interesting, but I really want you to change it in the back of my mind, he would have sensed that and he would have resented it. Because I'm like, no, let's keep it here. And I sincerely meant it. Sometimes he'd be like, oh, yeah, I kept it here because I had roommates and just, you know, seemed like the place to put it. But yeah, we put it wherever you want. You know, and there'd be times he'd be like, well, let's redo this closet. Where do you think this stuff should go? And we could do that together because I approached it humbly.
Well, speaking about just your marriage and with Jay, I was wondering if you would touch a little bit on how he's in more of a risky occupation. Does that affect you he does firefighting?
Yes, he does firefighting. Usually I don't know when he's in danger until it's over. he'll call me and say, oh, we were just in a 3-alarm fire. There are some times when I'm on the phone with him and they'll get a call and he's like, oh, you know, it's a building fire, gotta go.
Mm-hmm. Or just knowing that that's usually
usually I'm at peace about it. I pray and I know that his life's in God's hands, and when his days are numbered and when they're up, he's not going to live one day more, one day less, and just trust that in God's hand. God knows when he wants Jay to join him in heaven. And so I just have to release Jay to him. Most recently, we had the riots in Charlotte.
Right, I was going to ask you about those.
When he told me we're going out, and it wasn't Charlotte people, it was people bussed in from other states. When he told me about that, and knowing these were the same people who had done riots in different cities, I felt a very strong urging in my spirit to pray for him, the police officers, the other firefighters who had to be there on the scene with the rioters, to pray for the rioters and to request prayer. God's like, no, put on Facebook, ask for prayer. I normally don't do that, but this was a situation where I knew very clearly we needed a lot of prayer backup. And I think things could have gotten much uglier because some of the rioters were very vocal about their agenda, which was they wanted to get arrested. They wanted to force an arrest. So they were doing things to try to force a reaction. But I think having that prayer cover protected Jay, protected the other people there from getting hurt. And so whenever God impresses in my heart to pray, I don't put it off. I drop everything and do it immediately. I'm on the phone with someone, I'll be like, you know what, let's pray for Jay right now. And that is part of my role as his partner, is to provide that prayer backup when he's in the middle of something.
That's really neat. Seeing even how we're talking about different roles and seasons that God has us in. Like when you're talking about before you were married, he had a clear definition of what you would be able to throw yourself into.
Yes.
And even serving the people, you could drop and drop everything. It's only going to affect you and your schedule. And he's now partnered you in a marriage, and you're able to bring people alongside. You're like, let's drop this conversation and pray together, because I have this sense that I really do need to be
praying. And the thought hit me, what if Jay dies during these riots? Because they were blocking the fire trucks and firefighters when they were setting fires to stop them from putting the fires out. And they're not in riot gear like the police, so they could get hurt. And the thought went through my head, and I went, you know what? If he doesn't live through this, God'll take care of me like he always does. I have no idea what that would look like for my future, you know, where I would go, who I would live with, whether or not I would need someone to take care of me, if I could manage to live on my own, which would be easier now with, you know, the internet and being able to order groceries online and have them delivered and order stuff online, have it delivered to the house. When I first got sick, we didn't have all that. So if you couldn't make it to the store, you starved. If you didn't have someone who would come bring you stuff. It would be a lot easier now in some ways. But in a lot of ways, I still need someone. Anyway, but so not knowing. Not knowing. Or would God heal me completely? Or and I'm like, do you know what? I don't need to figure that out.
You live in the moment.
God knows my future. And whether Jay lives or dies, God will take care of me as long as I'm trusting him. If I try to step in and try figure it out myself, I'm just going to make a big mess of it. I will let him lead me, and I'm not going to fret over it. I'm not going to worry over it.
Yeah,
I'll trust him.
Yeah, you do a very good job of speaking truth to yourself, and God speaking that to you. And the one question I wanted to kind of hit on, and I feel like basically we've been hitting it this whole conversation with just eternal homemaking is a theme that I have in my mind. And as Christ is, when he left, he said he's going to prepare a place for us.
Yes.
And then John said, he talks also about how the Father and him have come and will come and make their home with us. And I think Revelation talks about that as well. And something that I've just been contemplating on more, it really affects the way you can live and view your life now when you know you allow this moment to be what it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Because the best is yet to come.
Yes.
And knowing that God is preparing and just how his bride is being prepared for him for that marriage supper of the Lamb.
Yes.
And that Christ as the bridegroom is preparing a home for his family. And any Christian that we interact with or any non-Christian has the potential that might be part of his family, mm-hmm. can really give us a view towards eternity, yes. for relationships. And I'm just wondering, I feel like you've already hit it on so many aspects we've talked, but I'm just wondering what it would mean to you that Christ is preparing a home for
you.
Well,
I've as I've gotten older and gone through this journey, I've tried to focus on things with an eternal perspective and saying, is this of eternal value? And even, like I said, getting married and having differences of opinions with my husband and going, is this a situation of eternal value or not? If it's not, who cares? You know, does it really matter, you know, which bed frame we get, which wasn't an issue for us, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But in looking at the situation, saying, what does this matter in light of eternity? Mm-hmm. And in looking at things in light of eternity, it makes this life so much easier. Mm-hmm. I'm not that wrapped up in material things because they're very temporary. And it's almost like having a rental house. Mm-hmm. And you think about how much effort and energy am I going to put in this rental house when I know my house is being built?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, am I really going to pay to put an addition on a rental when I know I'm leaving? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't I rather send those materials on to my forever home, rather than investing so much into this? You know, yeah, I might paint the walls a color I like, and, you know, I want to make sure that the plumbing's not backed up and the, you know, sprinkler isn't broken. And yeah, I'll take care of the rental, but I'm not going to put so much of a focus on it when it's just a temporary thing.
And you can focus on the things that are going to be continuing into your new house from this house.
Yeah.
So if you're renting, you know, there may be things in your rental that will continue on, just like in this life now. It's not that nothing matters now. It's only going to start.
It's what it's what we're sending ahead, and it's the character that we're building here that we will take with us. It's the spiritual growth that we will take with us. It's the souls that we will bring with us. Yeah. And in fact, one time I was at Cheryl's, had a very bad episode, knew I was dying. I had some systems that were shutting down. Called the paramedics because I didn't want to die in her house because I thought that will leave her with bad memories of this bedroom. and I was dying. And I said goodbye to her even. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the way to the hospital, thought, this might be my last chance to bring someone to heaven with me. And so I started witnessing to the paramedics. And one was a believer and one wasn't. So I'm like, all right, dude, I'm focusing on you. And I could barely talk, but what I could get out, I was like, he's going to hear about this. And they were driving very slowly because I was in such bad shape. And so I thought, I got a captive audience. What's he going to do? Jump out? What's he going to do? Argue with me? I'm the patient. I'm like, he's got to sit here and listen all the way to the hospital, which made
captive
the
audience.
Hospital ride, the ride to the hospital, much easier than it could have been had I just been focusing on the pain. And after I got there and the doctors told Jay there was nothing they could do, Jay called everybody for prayer, and God told me very clearly then, I mean, I was on the verge. I didn't realize, I always say this, I thought the shadow of death was a metaphor, but there was actually like a shadow that fell over me, and I was like, I knew I was dying. And then God said, okay, no, it's not your time. And it lifted. And suddenly I sat up. I could, you know, I was doing better. And the doctor was freaked out. One of the other doctors said to Jay and to me, I mean, his voice was shaking. He's like, do you realize? And I was going in adrenal crisis. He said, once you get to that point, there's nothing we can do other than watch you die. And he said, you were there. You were at that point. It's only God that got you out of this. Wow. This was a God thing because there's nothing we can do. Wow. And there's no way to reverse it. Wow. But God, and God reversed it. Wow. I was ready to go. You know, that's not like I was like, oh, I'm so grateful I could live longer. No, I was ready either way, whatever God wanted. And whatever the purpose was, I thought, maybe the purpose was for the paramedic, and Jay got his phone number and ended up giving him a Bible, and we wrote some stuff to him, and I don't know where God took that, but maybe that was just for that purpose, in which case, I was glad to go through that night of pain, if that means another soul makes it into heaven.
And then, and to live with that very close reality of potential of death, I can only imagine it would even spur your heart and mind further to build towards eternity and to have your sights set on the prize of the heavenward call of Christ.
Well, I, when I was in the ambulance going, how many people have I led to the Lord? Wow, I've kind of wasted my life. And I kind of had that thought of, wow, I've done so little. You know, let me grab this last opportunity.
And one thing that I love with that thought is of how Christ is actually the ultimate eternal homemaker. So he uses us, but he's the one ultimately, he's bringing his family together. Yes. He's making his family. He's using his family to bring others into his family.
Yeah.
But he's the ultimate homemaker, in my analogy, if we can put it that way. Mm-hmm. So he's eternal homemaking. He's starting his family, and he's building it, and he's using you, using each of his family. But it's so sweet because it's more of a privilege that we get to be used in that. And then... Just
and
to
it's,
give us
and
opportunities.
It's helping us, like you're saying, he's our bridegroom, preparing us to be the bride. And when I was single, I would say, I would quote the verse, your maker is your husband, the Lord of hosts is his name. And I quoted that a lot when people would say, oh, do you want to get married? I'm like, well, my maker's my husband, the Lord of hosts is his name. I can't do better than that, you know. But even in being married to Jay, my husband, understanding how God is filing off some of the rough edges and better preparing me to be a bride for eternity, not just this temporary state of being married to Jay here on earth. You know, so even all of that and how I'm interacting with Jay, well, let me back up. When I first got married, God made this very clear to me, and this is one thing that has given us such a good, solid marriage. Realizing one thing, that the point of marriage is not to make us happy, it's to make us holy. I read the book Sacred Marriage and realized my goal is not happiness. My goal is to be more like Christ. Mm-hmm.
And in that comes joy, comes
peace. But that's not my goal. And when you make happy your goal, it puts way too much pressure on the other person. Because if I'm not happy today, it's your fault. And then that builds resentments and frustrations and expectations, where if I look at Jay and go, I'm trying to be more Christ-like and you're helping me in that. So even in the conflicts, I can look at that and realizing there's nothing that Jay can do to me that I don't do to the Lord. And so if I'm looking at Jay going, well, I feel neglected, I have to turn around and go, before I talk to him about that, how am I making God feel neglected? You know, I'm feeling ignored by Jay. Okay, how am I making God feel ignored? Wait a minute, Lord, I really have been ignoring you lately. So I'm making you feel the way Jay's made me feel. Thank you for highlighting that. Mm. And then coming to Jay saying, you know, you kind of were ignoring me yesterday. But I also have to tell you that it made me realize how much I've been ignoring God lately. And even if I'm confronting him about something, I'm doing it with a humble attitude because I'm realizing my own sin. And he really highlighted that our first year of marriage. I had been married a few months and went to one of Jay's high school reunions. We went there and I was having a very good day that I could even go. And you know, most people didn't remember him because he grew 6 inches after high school.
Oh, wow.
So he looked very different. You know, he looked like a little kid.
That's not very common at that age of stage of life.
So he was just a little kid when he left high school. And then, you know, he looks like a man now, filled out, broadened, and, you know, everything. Nobody recognized him. So I just went around pretending like I knew people. I'm like, hey, how are you? And they're like, oh, hi. Like, I have no idea who this is. And I had fun doing that and just bringing people together. I always feel like it's my goal at a party to find people who look more uncomfortable than me and make them feel comfortable. And that's how I dealt with insecurity when I was younger. I thought, well, they look like they're not having a good time. Okay, that will be my focus. So I was bringing people together and got a big table of, I don't know, there were like at least 10 to table, maybe more, of people together who looked like they didn't know what they were doing there. And was having a fairly good time. And then a girl came over and she recognized Jay. And he was so excited and clearly liked her in high school and jumped up and knocked two chairs over, going over to give her a hug. And then he was standing in front of me talking to her.
And like, did you introduce
and
me?
I am looking at, you know, his behind. And finally I reached up, grabbed his arm and yanked him down. He lost his balance and plopped down in his chair. And I leaned over and I'm like, hi, I'm his wife. He's like, oh yeah, this is Pamela, my wife. And this is, what's her name? And there was nothing flirty with them and all of that. But it was just a good high school memory. And I wasn't jealous of her or of any of that at all, but I just like, okay, just don't ignored. Be rude to me. Yeah. Don't be rude to me. And I'm like, that is so rude, you know? But I'm like, but okay, but I want to have a nice evening. So I'm going to set it aside till it's over. And I was winding down pretty quickly. So we didn't stay much longer after that, but on the way out, and I was mostly embarrassed by other people seeing the fact that here's my husband, knowing we're newlyweds, suddenly another woman walks up and he totally forgets he's married. I mean, that's humiliating. So I was ticked. And as we're walking out to the car, I was like, Lord, that was just, I have to talk to him about that because that was just so rude. He didn't even introduce me. And I heard the still small voice of God say, and how many people did you introduce me to? I was there.
Giving you a good parallel.
And I went, oh, wow. So I made you feel the way he made me feel. Oh, wow. We got in the truck and I'm like, oh, Jay, you're not going to believe what I just did. I'm like, yeah, I was upset with you not introducing me to her, which don't ever do that again. But that just made me realize I didn't talk about the Lord the whole night. I met all these new people and didn't bother to even mention him. Just kept it so superficial, and I'm sure that there were hurting people there who would benefit or who had been looking if I had just mentioned his name, if that would have opened up a whole conversation to hear something, maybe pray for somebody or, you know, and that was God starting the road of me realizing I can't get mad at Jay for anything because there is not one single thing that a husband can do to me that I have not done or am actively doing right now to the one I call my Lord.
That's neat. Pamela, it's so neat to hear all of the very clear pictures that you have seen in your life of marriage, singleness, illness, whatever it is, the clear picture that God has given of himself. And in his relationship and how he relates to us. And just kind of back at the beginning when we were talking about how he gives those analogies in the Bible of being a father or his right hand or things like that, where it, I just can't help but see how tender and compassionate he is as a father. Yes. He does not need to stoop down to our level, but he does. And he gives these analogies.
And it's so sweet about it and so much grace and so... You know,
and the reason he highlights
I was
is
so indignant with Jay, and yet God wasn't indignant with me. He was so sweet about the, well, you know, you didn't introduce me to anybody either.
Yeah.
You know, and just that grace and realizing, wow, I got all this grace for him. How dare I withhold that grace from Jay? So there the times when Jay has genuinely wronged me, you know, he has done something to hurt me or, you know, genuinely wronged me to realize. And yet I have genuinely wronged God, which is much worse.
There's always a cost and somebody has to pay.
Somebody has to pay.
And he has paid a higher cost than we ever are paying for other people's hurts towards us.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
and so because of that, I've had way more grace than in my marriage than I probably would have had any other time. And there are people, I met Jay when I was in college. And we dated when I was 19, and there are people who are like, oh, don't you wish you'd married him back then? I'm like, no, we'd hate each other's guts. No, I needed that time to mature. He needed that time. God brought us together at the right time, and at the right time was when I was almost 35. I don't think I knew God well enough to handle the marriage the way I do now.
Would you share in a really brief nutshell, because sure. I know we're getting longer here and I wanted to wrap up soon, a little bit of that story? Like, so you just...
Oh, yeah.
Because you met at 19, we met, got married at 35.
We met at 19, when I was 19. We dated for, well, we were friends first semester in college and dated second semester. And his dad had a basketball coaching contract for a year. And when the year was up, the contract wasn't renewed. So they moved back to North Carolina. Well, I was from Arizona. Mm-hmm. So neither of us had money for a long distance relationship. And it wasn't that serious. And I realized he really didn't know the Lord the way I did, even though it was a Christian school. Mm-hmm. He really wasn't where I was spiritually. So it wouldn't have progressed. But we wrote and called every now and then and just kind of kept loosely in touch for the next couple of years. And then we lost touch for a couple of years after I graduated. And just before I got sick, a mutual friend ran into him and he got my phone number from her. I was living in California at the time, and called me, and we renewed the friendship and wrote and called and emailed for the next 12 years.
Wow. That's a long
As I was growing in the Lord, he would usually call me for prayer when he got in trouble, or his family was in trouble, or there was someone was sick, or there was a crisis. And I would talk to him about my life and the Lord, and he was not ready to make that commitment. Until one day he said to me, "You know what? I always call you for prayer, and you never call me for prayer." I'm like, "No," he said, "because you know I have no idea who I'm praying to." He was a good Catholic boy, fairly moral, and he had the idea, go to Mass once a week and forget about God the rest of the time, you know. There are Catholics with a genuine faith. He was not one of them. And he said, "I want to know God the way you know God." I'd sent him a Bible before, I'd, you know, send him some books and stuff, and I'd heard him kind of saying along those lines, you know, "Wow, that's cool how God talks to you. I need to talk to him more." But he never really did anything about it. So I was skeptical. However, he meant it this time. And he went and looked up a man that he'd met 6 years earlier who had given the gospel message to him, and called him up, talked to him, met with him, genuinely turned his life over to the Lord. And he said, "You know, I've wasted so much of my life. I want to grow really quickly." He told me that. I'm like, "Okay, well, look out, because growing quickly is accompanied by a lot of growing pains. It's a very painful process when you grow fast," which he should have known from his growth spurt after high school.
It's true.
The slow growth doesn't hurt as much. And he did. He grew very quickly. He was very genuine, very dedicated, very hungry for the Lord. And it was shortly after that that God arranged for us to see each other again for the first time in 12 years.
Wow.
And made it very clear, "Yep, want you to get married." And I was like, wait, what? Because I already resigned myself to that point to never getting married. And being sick, was not sure how much I could contribute being a wife. I was like, "Nope, this is what you need to do, and here's when you need to get married," which was way sooner than I was comfortable with. But I obeyed, and we got married, and God began the process of refining both of us through iron sharpening iron, you know, like it says in Proverbs.
You can bring something out of nothing like that,
yes,
too. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was the right time, and, you know, neither of us had gotten married to anybody else. He had kind of gotten close twice, but it was more out of feeling like, "I'm getting old, I'm getting married, and I should get married, people expect me to." Not that he really wanted to get married to that person. So I'm very grateful that God kept him from doing that, because he definitely wouldn't have been as content with his life as he is now.
Yeah. Well, that's really neat. Sweet story for you to share. I'm going to switch gears towards our ending here. I just have some fun questions to roll out quick. I don't know if you have answers to these, but
okay.
I'll give them all to you at once.
Okay.
Just so you know where we're going. And then
okay. And then ask me one at a time?
Yes.
Okay.
One is, what would be your ideal day? Two is, what are some of your favorite things in this season? It could be practical, like objects, hobbies, fun things.
Okay.
And thirdly, do you have any secret talents or hobbies? So.
Okay. First one was.
First one. What was your ideal day?
What was my ideal day, or what would be?
Or what was, if you've already had it?
What would be an ideal day for me would be a day from start to finish with no pain. I have not had that in 23 years. And I don't remember what it is to wake up and not have pain be my first thought. Mm. Or my last thought going to bed. I forget what it's like to move without pain. Mm-hmm. To do anything without pain constantly being in the background or foreground. So to me, doing anything without pain would be fantastic.
Are there particular things that you would like to do in a day that you can't because of pain? That you're like, I had no pain.
But I would love to do. I would love to go to an amusement park. Hmm. Right now, there's just too much stimulus. It's too loud, too many people, too much movement, too much sound, and ride roller coasters. I think that would be a lot of fun. I would love to do that. Cool. I'd love to zip line. Anything physical, I think, that I haven't been able to do in so long.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Whitewater rafting.
Yeah. Oh, this would be a fun day.
Yes. That's what I'd love.
Cool. So what are some of your favorite things in this season?
I am enjoying chickens. Mm-hmm. Something I never thought I would, and yet I'm getting such a kick out of it and such a kick out of seeing what care God put into developing their personalities. No, I do not feel guilty eating chicken. And that is only because the meat chickens, the breeds that they use for meat, are very mean chickens. And they're mean to each other. They're mean to people.
So you're not going
to
eat your own
so
pet chicken.
My pet chickens are have been bred for egg production.
Okay.
So they're egg layers and they're very sweet because people always ask me that. Well, how can you eat chicken after that? Well, they're not these types of chickens that I'm eating.
Sure.
So I'm enjoying learning about chickens and how they act and their personalities and how trainable they are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying my dogs. I miss having cats. I hope God brings cats into our life again. I really hope someday he brings us a pygmy goat, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that because my husband's not real excited about the idea of a goat.
Well, he doesn't have to mow the lawn anymore.
I know, but he's worried about the goat ending up in bed with us, and he has a hard enough time finding leg space with the dogs at the end of the bed. So,
fair enough.
And he's like, but goats stink. I'm like, so do the dogs if you don't give them a bath. Just bathe the goat every time you bathe the dogs. He's still not a fan of the idea, but we've got time. We'll work on him.
What about one more thing in this season? What is one more thing that you're enjoying?
I'm enjoying doing a lot of things from scratch in an effort to control what I'm putting in my body for optimal health. I'm making my own organic bread from scratch. I have an organic garden. Mm-hmm. I make
kombucha.
So kombucha. I've made shampoo and lotions and my own chapstick and a lot of different things like that. My own cheese from raw milk.
Do you look online to learn?
Online, yeah. Usually online. Or I had a friend who was dropping off her homeschool daughter while my friend was in classes. I was taking care of her 13-year-old. And so I would look for things to do to teach her that I wanted to do.
Okay.
So I would be like, Becca, today we're going to learn how to make mozzarella. And she'd be like, yay. And I'm like, yes, I have 2 quarts of milk. And the recipe calls for 3 quarts. So you have to cut down the rest of the recipe for me. That's homeschooling.
There you go.
So anything that I didn't want to figure out, I told her it was homeschooling. She's like, yeah, we're not doing that homeschooling. I'm like, this is a home, and that is schoolwork. So it counts.
Nice.
And she'd laugh. Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
Oh,
but doing learning stuff like that, which I think if I were healthy and working, I wouldn't have the time or inclination to do things with my hands and to make things from scratch and I can't hold knitting needles very well, so I learned to arm knit and finger knit.
Okay.
And just even within the limitations that I have, finding things to do to contribute and
looking for what opportunities that you have in that.
I make my own apple cider vinegar and make my own vanilla extract, and you know, just it's not strenuous. You cut up the apples and let them sit, you know, and just you know, not that are physically strenuous things, but things that will certainly make saving money.
And the productive. Mm-hmm.
I feel productive. And yes.
Yeah. Very cool. What about a secret talent or a hobby? Although you've kind of hit on some hobbies.
Yes, I've hit on hobbies. I can't think of any other than I do make the best kombucha I've ever had.
That's a secret recipe.
I do have some tips and tricks.
Like certain types of sugars
that
to
I
use.
Do, different types of sugars and the tea ratio and the water I use and the flavoring. Because most people who refuse to drink kombucha will taste mine and go, oh, actually yours is good. Oh, the one I bought in the store didn't taste like this. Or
so
my
you
friends
use
didn't taste like
not
this.
A raw sugar, but a white or an organic.
Organic cane sugar, but not a raw sugar or a whole sugar. Okay. And you have to be careful with the water that doesn't have too many minerals. You don't want to use distilled either, mineral free. A lot of little things like that to make it.
Perfect it.
Yes, it tastes really good. So I would call myself a master kombucha maker.
Do you market it? Do you sell that to your friends? You have your eggs,
actually,
you
yes. I have friends who get I'm making 8 gallons of kombucha every 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I have several people who get kombucha for me.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And they bring me, because at first I'm like, yeah, it's like $1.64 a gallon. It's not a big deal. And they're like, yeah, but your time. So they'll like buy me more kombucha bottles, or they'll find some in pretty colors and bring them, or you know, they'll be like, oh, we're at Costco, I brought you toilet paper, or you know,
they're the kombucha queen.
Yeah, I'm not doing it as a business, but they definitely compensate me.
Mm-hmm.
And I make good bread too. I have a friend who now wants me to start making loaves every week when I make our bread, to make her some bread too. So little things like that, who knows when I get healthier. Those things may turn into a business. I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, very cool. Thank you, Pamela. This was so much
fun. I had fun talking to you.
Glad we could do this. You're just such a wealth of information and knowledge and stories, and just so entertaining. I'm so glad we could talk.
Well, thank
you
for interviewing
me. Yeah, and hear and be encouraged.
Thank you for listening in on my conversation with Pamela. I hope you enjoyed it and were encouraged as much as I was. Until next time, may your heart find its home in Christ and hope in the eternal home He is preparing for us.